Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the latest local election results. Paula Kay wins Aileen Gunther's seat in New York's 100th Assembly District. Peter Oberrocker is re-elected to New York's 51st State Senate seat. Josh Riley defeats Mark Molinaro in New York's 19th Congressional District. Molinaro has yet to concede. And Rob Bresnahan wins Pennsylvania's 8th. We'll talk to our partners at the Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau, the River Reporter, and VoteBeat PA, plus live reaction from local officials. That's coming up here on Radio Catskill, plus joined by the intrepid Jason Dole and Patricio Rubio as we wrap up this election coverage. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Donald Trump is now the president-elect of the United States. That's according to a race call made earlier this morning by the Associated Press. Trump carried vital swing states from North Carolina to Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Some exit polls say voters had democracy on their minds as they cast ballots. But pollster Christine Matthews says a more important issue to many voters is the economy.
I think my number one takeaway is this. Inflation is really bad for an incumbent administration. When you look back over time, the administrations with the highest inflation rates resulted in one-term presidencies. Carter, Ford, and now Biden-Harris.
She spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. Vice President Harris was with supporters last night at her alma mater, Howard University in Washington. She has not yet spoken to her supporters. 10 states presented voters with questions regarding abortion. Voters in 3 states, Florida, Nebraska, and South Dakota, have kept their abortion bans in place. Voters in 7 states have voted to protect the procedure, including in Arizona, Maryland, Missouri, Nevada, New York, and Montana. Colorado Public Radio's Benta Berkland reports Colorado voters added abortion rights into the state constitution and voted to remove a gay marriage ban.
Voters overwhelmingly backed adding the right to abortion access into the Colorado Constitution. It would allow public funding for the procedure and ban state or local governments from restricting access. Colorado has been a regional hub for abortion access. Voters also removed a 2006 voter-approved gay marriage ban. Supporters said it was about fairness and equality for the LGBT community and would protect the state if the U.S. Supreme Court reverses protections for same-sex marriage. For NPR News, I'm Benta Berkland in Brighton, Colorado.
Republicans will take control of the Senate next year. They flipped 2 seats away from Democrats in Ohio and Montana. The GOP also captured an open seat in West Virginia. Stocks opened sharply higher this morning as investors assess the likely effects of the election. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed more than 1,200 points in early trading.
Stocks rallied on expectations that President-elect Trump will cut taxes and government regulations. Trump has promised to extend portions of the 2017 tax cut and possibly cut corporate taxes even further. Tax cuts could encourage faster economic growth. They'd also likely widen the federal deficit, raising the government's interest costs. The yield on 10-year treasuries jumped sharply, which will likely push high mortgage rates even higher. Trump has also promised to impose sweeping tariffs on imports and called for large-scale deportation of immigrants, moves that economists say would put upward pressure on prices. Stock in the parent company of Trump's social media platform jumped sharply. So did shares in Tesla, run by Trump backer Elon Musk.
This is NPR. North Carolina Democratic Attorney General Josh Stein has won the governor's race in that state. He defeated Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Robinson's campaign faltered after CNN reported that he had posted pro-slavery and pro-Nazi comments on an adult website. Robinson, who is black, denied writing the posts. Sabrina Carpenter is top of a list of artists who registered the most new voters for the 2024 presidential election. NPR's Chloe Veltman reports that's according to the voting nonprofit group Headcount.
The singer behind the chart-topping single Espresso registered nearly 36,000 voters through her partnership with Headcount. The nonprofit says Sabrina Carpenter also inspired more than 250,000 people to check their voter registration status and polling location. Lucille Wenegema is the executive director of Headcount.
When somebody with a really big platform says this is something that you should be caring about, and not just because of one candidate or another, it moves the conversation forward.
Meanwhile, Green Day broke Headcount's record for most voters engaged during a single tour. The rock band registered close to 8,000 new voters. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
Forecasters say Hurricane Rafael is gaining strength as it heads into the Gulf of Mexico. It's a Category 2 storm with top sustained winds of 110 miles per hour. It's expected to make landfall on western Cuba today. Tropical storm warnings are now posted for part of the Florida Keys. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Charles Schwab, offering investors choices like full-service wealth management, advice, investing, and trading on Thinkorswim. Learn more at schwab.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it is the day after the election, and folks are waking up to news that Donald Trump has been reelected. The headline of the New York Times, Trump storms back, a stunning return to power after a dark and defiant campaign. As folks are processing that information, we're also processing what's going on at the state level and the local level in New York and Pennsylvania. To get into that, I'm joined by my colleagues Jason Dole and Patricia Rabayo, who were here late and back early. Good morning.
That's how it goes. Howdy.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for your coverage last night and getting us through the night. And we're going to check in with our news partners this morning. First, we're going to talk to Philip Pantuso from the Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau. Also up late last night, I assume. Philip, good morning.
Yeah, I'm running on coffee this morning. Good morning to you guys.
We are too. Want to talk about the results in New York. First, I want to start off with some of the congressional races. I'm going to go in descending order from 19 to 17. The New York's 19th district, which encompasses a large swath of the state and our listening area, the projected winner there is Josh Riley, the Democrat, the challenger to the incumbent Mark Molinaro.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, there's a lot of attention paid to the top of the ticket, the presidential election, and kind of more general sort of rightward shift that we're seeing kind of across the country. But in New York, Democrats did have a few wins, and this is one of them. There were several key swing districts in the Hudson Valley and Long Island that were crucial to both parties' chances of controlling Congress. And while we don't yet know who's going to control Congress, because there are still a lot of competitive districts out west that have not yet been called, Democrats in New York did slip a couple of seats. The 19th district is one that was perhaps the most focused or garnered the most focus by both parties. At least in this state and arguably across the country, there was tons of outside spending.
It was one of the most competitive in the entire country and one of the most heavily spent on by both sides, I guess, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And this was a rematch, really, of 2 years ago when kind of the inverse thing happened as what happened this year. 2 years ago, of course, Democrats did much better than was predicted in the midterms, except in New York, where they lost several of these competitive swing districts. In New York 19, the incumbent was Mark Molinaro, a well-known political figure in New York State, former Republican candidate for governor. He was Dutchess County executive for a while, and for the past 2 years, he has represented this district in Congress. He lost to Josh Riley, who grew up in the area, sort of in and around Ithaca, but has spent most of his career in Washington, D.C. as a lawyer, but has moved back in the past couple of years to run these two campaigns. And that race was called early in the morning. I think it was about 1:15. In the end, it was a fairly, I don't want to say fairly comfortable, I guess, but
Well, it's kind of a narrow, seems like a narrow victory with 94% of the votes in. It looks like it's less than 4,000 votes separating the two. But Riley declared victory in Ithaca. However, Mark Molinar has yet to concede.
That's right. Yeah. Last night he said that he wanted to wait for, he did give a speech, but he said he wanted to wait for absentee and mail-in ballots to come in. He gave that speech before the race was officially called. So I expect he will concede today, but you're right. He has not yet conceded that race.
All right, let's move on to another district, District 18. Pat Ryan, the incumbent, won over challenger Allison Esposito.
Yeah, this was another hotly contested district. It was one that Pat Ryan won 2 years ago as well. He was sort of the one Democrat in these three competitive Hudson Valley districts who held on to a seat. And with 95% of the vote in right now, he's up by a healthy margin, about 13% over Esposito, who was Lee Zeldin's running mate as lieutenant governor a couple of years ago against Kathy Hochul.
And the 18.
Ryan's broadly popular. So it was fairly expected that he would hold on to this seat, and he has.
And the 18th spans through Orange County and most of Dutchess and Ulster counties. And again, he was expected to win. But again, as we've been saying, these congressional districts in this swath of our area in the Hudson Valley were the most volatile in the last election. It looks like Democrats have held two of them, the 19th and 18th. But in the 17th, the incumbent, Mike Lawler, won.
Yeah. And this also was kind of according to plan, although this race was certainly running a little closer than NY18. Lawler is kind of to Republicans, I think, what Ryan is to Democrats, considered fairly mainstream, fairly moderate, and broadly popular. He won this race 2 years ago in a major upset at the time. That district is a toss-up, but there are about 80,000 more registered Democrats than Republicans. But Lawler has deep ties there. He was a state assemblyman before he was a congressman representing that area. And he won. Right now, he's up by about 16%. In that race as well, the challenger, Mondaer Jones, has yet to concede, I'm told, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm told that a statement is forthcoming. So it's possible he has at least issued a statement, but I don't think he gave a concession speech yet.
He, Mondaer Jones, was redistricted out of his original district, right? And then was put here. This was a fairly contentious race as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had represented the old 17th congressional district. He was elected in 2020, and then in 2022, redistricting changed the borders of that district. The former 16th congressional district representative, he was the 18th representative, Sean Patrick Maloney. His home was redistricted into the 17th, so he jumped into that district. Mondaer Jones decided to run in Brooklyn 2 years ago and lost in the primary. And then moved back to this district to take on Lawler. And yeah, you're right. That was a pretty contentious. All of these races were pretty contentious, frankly. Lawler or Jones, when he was first elected, ran as a more progressive candidate. And this was in 2020 when there were more candidates on the Democratic left saying things like defund the police, which Mondaer Jones did say, and that played in ads that aired all across the lower Hudson Valley this campaign cycle. And even though Jones tried to distance himself from those comments, that was seemingly a successful message for Lawler.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Philip Pantuso. He is the managing editor for the Hudson Valley Bureau of the Times Union. We're going over some of the election results in New York State. We've talked about the congressional districts. I want to mention at the Senate level, Kirsten Gillibrand, the incumbent, was reelected. Any surprise there in terms of Sapricone closing any kind of gap or making any gains there? I mean, it was expected that she would win.
I mean, to be honest, the fact that she only won by about 20 points, which was the gap last time I saw it, that struck me as a little closer than I thought it would be. I mean, and it tracks with some of the broader trends we're seeing in New York. Harris is going to win. Harris won the state, but she's going to win it by less than Biden did and less than what is typical. And another thing that I thought was kind of interesting as a just sort of state level broadline takeaway is that coming into election night, the narrative around Proposition 1, which enshrined a broad new set of discrimination protections in the state constitution, was that it would trail Harris in New York. But actually, it looks like there's going to end up being more votes for Prop 1 in New York than for Harris.
Yeah, currently, and projected to pass by 61.9% to 38.1% Prop 1 in New York. I want to get down to some of the state-level races. New York State Senate District 51, Peter Oberrocker, reelected for a third term over Democratic challenger Michelle Frazier.
Yeah, that's right. And that kind of tracks with just a lot of what we saw in the state legislature races, which is basically incumbents winning everywhere. Oberrocker won. He's up by 20% right now over Frazier, with almost all of the vote counted there. Further up in the Mid-Hudson Valley, incumbents in competitive districts like Rob Rollison and Michelle Hinchey won. James Skoufis also won. The takeaway, I think, from the legislature races are that incumbents really were able to hold on to their seats. It looks like really the question right now is whether or not Democrats are going to be able to maintain their supermajority in the Senate. That requires them to have 42 members. Results as of Wednesday morning show them having 41 seats, but there's at least one of those seats that's expected to face a recount. So Democrats are going to hold control of both chambers of the state legislature, to be clear, but whether or not they'll retain a supermajority remains to be determined.
And then the Assembly District 100, that open seat that Aileen Gunther, she's retiring, that's vacant. It was between Paula Kay and Lou Ingrassia Jr., the Democrat and the Republican there. It looks like Paula Kay, the Democrat, has won and edged out Ingrassia.
Yeah, that was one race I was really interested to follow because I talked about this a little bit last night, but, you know, that seemed to be a potential pickup for Republicans upon the retirement of Gunther. Politics in that district suggests that, you know, it could go to the GOP. It looks like Paula Kay is going to win. I actually haven't seen, has she declared victory or has Ingrassia conceded?
I believe she has declared victory, and I have not seen his concession yet, but she is claiming the victory in that seat. And I don't.
Yeah,
I mean, she's leading, but I don't believe it's been called yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing on my end too. We have a big dashboard with all of the races across the state that's powered by State Board of Elections data, and then when the AP calls the race, it will be reflected on our dashboard, and it. Unless this particular one isn't updating, it doesn't look like the AP's called it yet.
Yes.
But that just, to me, the main takeaway here in New York is that there are voters who are willing to vote Democrat down the ticket, but maybe not for Harris at the top of the ticket.
And any other races that you were watching and, you know, either surprised by or expected to see some results in the Hudson Valley?
The one thing I'm still eyeing closely is across the river over in Dutchess County, there's a really competitive race for Dutchess County controller between the incumbent Republican Greg Pulver and the Democratic challenger Dan Imar Blair, who is a former Deacon City Council member. That race is currently shows Pulver up by 0.4%, has not been called yet. Probably going to go to a recount there. But that was one of a number of races at the county and state level that the Dutchess County Democrats were targeting and had put a lot of money into. I mentioned Rob Rollison winning his or maintaining his seat. The Dutchess County Democrats had run their party leader, minority leader, Yvette Valdez-Smith, to try to unseat him unsuccessfully. I did note that in Dutchess County, Harris won more votes than Trump, 51 to 47. And that county has kind of flip-flopped in recent years. So it'll be interesting to see how that, if the Democratic margin at the top of the ticket there will trickle down to some of these county level races. But that's kind of the one still race that seems like really undecided at the moment. Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we let you go, Jason or Patricio, anything more for Philip so we can get it back to some more coffee or
yeah.
A nap?
Well, definitely. Well, you mentioned whether Lou Ingracia conceded or not. He just posted about 29 minutes ago a statement on his Facebook page saying, "I stand before you today with gratitude and pride. Despite the outcome of this election, I want to extend my deepest thanks to everyone who supported me on this journey." So, right. Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you for that. Phil Pantuso from the Times Union, thank you so much. And again, the election results are open to all readers at timesunion.com, and you can go through and see the different county levels and different state level and national as well. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, I'll check in with Liam Mayo from the River Reporter about what's going on in Pennsylvania locally. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, South Africa's forgotten jazz history with music by Abdullah Ibrahim.
The only reality is a dream, because everything that you see in reality started with a dream.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9. Here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio by Jason Dole as well, and going to run down some other races and propositions that have been happening in the state at the local level. In Ulster County, it looks like, as we have said in that previous segment with Philip, that Michelle Hinchey was winning there. Ulster County Proposal 1 to create departments and add legislative confirmation for some positions in county government passed. Ulster County Proposition 2, change how a vacant role on the county legislature is filled. That passed. In Kingston, there was an established real estate transfer tax to support the Kingston Community Preservation Fund proposition. That passed. In Gardner, a proposition to increase the budget for the Gardner Library passed. New Paltz proposition to increase the budget for the Elting Memorial Library passed. There was a proposition in Marlborough that passed to increase the budget for the Sarah Hull Halleck Free Library. In Olive, a proposition to increase the budget for the Olive Free Library passed. In Plattekill, the town council member Stephen O'Flaherty won. He's the Republican, beat the Democrat Michael Lembo. And in Ulster County as well, New York Assembly District 103, Sarah Hanna Srista won over Republican challenger Jack Hayes. In Sullivan County, we have been reporting again the state legislature, Senate District 51, Peter Oberrocker defeated Michelle Frazier. Also, some other local level races, the Bloomingburg Village Trustee, that has passed. The Highland Town Council member, Sonia M. Kidney, won, the Democrat, over Gerard Finn. In Liberty, the town council member, Bruce Davidson, the Republican, defeated Sherry Kevleski. in mammocating the proposition to extend the term of office of the highway superintendent to 4 years. That proposition failed. In Woodridge, the village mayor race, Joan Collins won, and at the village trustee, David Schlesinger won there. Now, joining us on the phone with some other news from across the river, it's Liam Mayo from The River Reporter. Liam, good morning.
Hi, Tim. Hope you got a little bit of sleep last night.
I did. Did you?
A couple of hours.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on in Pennsylvania. We were running down a lot of the races in New York. What can you tell us? Well, let's start at the top there. It looks like in the 8th Congressional District, Matt Cartwright, the incumbent, was defeated.
Yeah. The race still hasn't officially been called by the AP, which is the source we've been using for sort of to make mark the dot. But he, as challenger, Rob Bresnahan, leads with 51% of the vote. And Bresnahan actually ended up declaring victory last night, or he released a statement in which he declared victory last night. That statement reads in part, quote, "I am eager to get to work for our district, and I give my word that as their congressman, there will be no R or D next to my name, only N-E-P-A, unquote. So that's where that race stands.
And that is a flip for that, because as we said, Cartwright was the incumbent. And it looks like if you're looking at the county level results, Bresnahan really excelled in Wayne and Pike and Luzerne counties, where Cartwright excelled in Lackawanna and Monroe.
Yeah, that's what we've been seeing sort of as well. And that's sort of in line with the partisan split of those counties as we've been looking at them.
And other results for Wayne and Pike counties, what could you tell us in terms of the local level at the 139th district seat?
Yeah, that's a race we were following. That's Jeff Olsemer versus Robin Skibber for the 139th seat in the House. And this one looks to be pretty firmly in Olsemer's bucket. According to unofficial results, he has 67% of the vote to Skibber's like 33%. And this is actually an improvement from their first time going against each other earlier in the year. Olsemer took the seat in the House as the result of a special election held in April. Skibber was his Democratic challenger then as well. And in that election, Olsemer won with around 60% of the vote. So there were, of course, more votes cast on both sides in the general election, just because there's a bigger turnout than in that special election. But Olsemer also kind of increased his level of support.
Has either candidate released a statement yet?
No, neither candidate has released a statement yet, and Cartwright hasn't released a statement yet either.
How was turnout in Wayne and Pike counties?
Yeah, turnout was pretty high. We heard anecdotally throughout the day that turnout was going to be high, at least according to sort of my back-of-the-envelope map. Based on the results as of this time, there were 78% of registered voters in Wayne County who turned out to vote, and that's compared to 79% from the general election 4 years ago, and then 73% of registered voters in Pike County turned out to vote. Something, sort of a breakdown of that we were looking at is whether Democrats would outperform their party registration. There was kind of a hope going into it that there would be these like quiet Democrats who might be registered Republican because that's kind of what their family has always done, but they might actually vote Democrat once they get in the polling booth. And I think Democrats did sort of outperform their registration a little bit. So like 31% of Wayne County voters voted for Kamala Harris, but that's compared to 24% of Wayne County voters who are registered Democrats. But that appears to be less like Democrats turning Republicans blue, and more just the fact that there are a lot of independent voters or voters registered as neither Democrat or Republican in both Wayne and Pike, and those voters, like a large chunk of them swinging for Democrats.
It looks like Harris got about 37.6% of the vote in Pike County, and you mentioned 31% in Wayne. Yesterday, I remember when we were talking to you during the special local edition that you had talked to some voters, Democratic voters, who had hoped that reaching a 40% threshold might show some strength, knowing that this is a very red area of Northeast Pennsylvania of the state.
Yeah, that was a number we heard floated around on the trail, just anecdotally. So it does seem like sort of the hopes of a blue wave, or at least the hopes of like strong Democratic support, sort of comparative to, you know, what you can expect for the makeup of Wayne and Pike counties, looks like even that didn't really materialize. And that seems to sort of have held for the election writ large. It seems to be part of like that larger trend with Democratic support not really being there in the ways it needed to be.
Yeah, and I think that jibes with what we're seeing nationally too, that there was this sort of hope in other areas of the country too that the Democrats might overperform what they were seeing on paper or in the polls. And so what you're seeing in Northeast Pennsylvania really kind of jibes with that.
Right.
In the headline in the River Reporter, a red wave for Wayne and Pike counties. And as we've been hearing on NPR news coverage and BBC news coverage, this, again, aligns with how there is a shift to the right in the country. So this just this seems like it's all lining up in that way.
Yeah. And I think it's also possible that there's just like people who are disillusioned with the voting process and sort of unwilling to turn out to vote for either party. I had an interaction with a voter in Honesdale, or a non-voter in Honesdale, who told me that he wasn't planning to vote because he just believes both parties are in cahoots, and that whoever gets in, they're just going to conspire with each other and sort of do what is best for the system as a whole. So I think like, even though there was sort of high turnout across the electorate, there's still this like edge of voters who might just be disillusioned from the entire process.
Anything else that you caught your eye after being out there and talking to voters and the results that we're seeing today?
I think the only thing I'd want to emphasize is that by all accounts in Wayne and Pike counties, it was a very smooth election. There were no reports of sort of supporters of either side being hostile to each other. There were no reports of, at least that we've heard, of problems in the electoral system. Both Wayne and Pike board of directors heads sort of told us last night that things were going really smoothly. So it just seems like a good day for sort of the civic process functioning smoothly in northeastern Pennsylvania.
All right, Leah Mayo with the River Reporter. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can get you to a nap.
Thanks for having me, and the same to you.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, more election coverage. We'll check in with Carter Walker from VoteBeat PA, who is going to dig deep into some numbers in Pennsylvania, that swing state. As we've been talking to him all election, this is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Well, Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio by Jason Dole and Patricio Rubio. We are checking in with our news partners for local results. We've talked to Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Phil Pantuso about the New York races. Also just heard from Liam Mayo about what's going on in Pennsylvania. Jason, anything that's caught your eye so far from some of the reporting we've heard?
Something that I'd like to remind people is following on from what we were talking to Philip about, looking at these upstate New York congressional races, where some of the most money was spent on congressional races in the nation. All this attention was there because these were key House seats that determined the makeup of the House 2 years ago. And so that's why, you know, the eyes of country are on this. That's why Speaker Johnson was in the area recently and saying in the area and then saying again last night, wherever he was, that he expects it to be a Republican controlled House, Senate and White House after Election Day. And I just wanted to give people the big picture of right now. We still don't actually know who is in charge of the House. AP is calling 180 seats for Democrats, 198 for the GOP. For a controlled House, you need at least 218 seats. So we're not quite there yet. The GOP is ahead of the Democrats. So, yeah. So that's something we're going to be watching. But that's the bigger picture that our local, regional congressional races, PA 8 and New York 19, 18, and 17 play into.
And AP also saying that it could take a few days to determine a winner in some of these House of Representative races that are yet to be called, and then we'll know who has control. But it does look like Republicans won a Senate majority. Let's check in with Carter Walker from Vote Beat PA. We've been checking with him all election season, and he joins us now. Carter, good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Pennsylvania, it, as we had predicted, was going to be a crucial swing state. It proved to be. And can you give us your top line thoughts on what happened in Pennsylvania yesterday?
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody's eyes were on us. And I think, thankfully, the headline, at least that I wrote, was that things went relatively smoothly. You know, unfortunately, like a lot of states around the nation, we did get a rash of bomb threats towards the end of the day. But aside from an incident in Cambria County that seems like it was resolved quickly, for the most part, the election went pretty smoothly.
And you had a chance to talk to the Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt. What did he say about the election?
Yeah, I went up to his press conference at the end of the day on election night, and he was very pleased with how things went. He thanked the election workers around the state for their work. You know, he reiterated that the bomb threats were still being investigated, and he cautioned that, you know, results might not be known for some time because we still had to count our mail ballots, which is still going on, and that would matter, as we've said, with how close the margin was. But we ended up getting results quicker than I think a lot of people expected. The race was not as close as I think a lot of people were anticipating, the race for president, at least, that is.
Yeah, and just in relation to the bomb threats, to be clear, there were bomb threats reported in several parts of the state, including Chester, York, Philadelphia, and Clearfield counties, as you report, as there were in other swing states across the country. But there were no bombs. Governor Josh Shapiro said the threats did represent a, quote, credible threat to public safety, and some locations did have to be briefly evacuated, and voting hours were extended for some of those affected locations. But those were just threats. Again, no, there were no bombs there. You mentioned, again, that folks maybe thought this was going to be closer than it turned out at the presidential level. What is your sort of analysis as you wake up this morning and look at these numbers?
Well, I think obviously turnout in the Philadelphia area was not as high as Democrats would have liked. I haven't checked the latest numbers for Philly, but I think they were asking or hoping to get turnout of 500,000, and it looks like they right now are a little under 700,000, though there's still some mail ballots to be counted, of course. So, you know, that obviously hurt them.
And I know that you and Jason spoke a lot about these court cases that made their way up through to Election Day. Do you think that there was any impact there?
That's tough to say. You know, like we said, a lot of these cases were coming down to a small number of ballots. Like, let's think about the provisional ballot case, right? That's one where if a voter makes a mistake on their mail ballot and their county doesn't allow them to fix it, they can go to their polling place and cast a provisional ballot and have that counted. Yeah, that's always going to be a small universe of people who are impacted by that. And then, of course, we were reporting a lot on these challenges to overseas voters' mail ballots, whether or not they should be eligible, which counties have been rejecting and counting those ballots. But again, that's a small number, about 4,000 or 5,000 maybe. So, you know, those figures really could have played in if the race had been super tight. But since it wasn't super tight, obviously that's why the AP was able to call it so quickly, because the margin was large enough that those small batches of ballots didn't have to be argued over. Though I'll, you know, try and reiterate again that these are still unofficial results and things won't be finalized until the state certifies a couple weeks from now.
You know, Carter, along the lines of all the court cases that we've been talking about, now that we are past Election Day, I find myself wondering, well, what happens next for Pennsylvania in terms of how Pennsylvania administers its elections? Do you foresee in the near to long term future that this is how elections will continue to be governed, with lots of court cases and suits? Or are there other possible solutions that the Commonwealth might explore?
Yeah, well, right now, there's nothing jumping out at me that's saying, okay, this is absolutely going to change the way we run stuff. I mean, a lot of that is still going to come down to where the Pennsylvania State House lands in terms of Republican or Democrat. Republicans kept the state Senate, according to the latest results I looked at. State House still somewhat in question. But, of course, we still have Governor Shapiro. So regardless of what happens in the State House, we're going to have some kind of bipartisan compromise to get any legislation passed. And, you know, if the last 4 years have been any indication, that hasn't been really a successful route. Now, if Republicans were to take both of the chambers, they could try, which they've done in the past, passing constitutional amendments that go directly to the voters for you know, election priorities. And they've done it with other things as well. But you have to pass those constitutional amendments in two consecutive legislative sessions. And since one of those on voter ID wasn't passed in this legislative session, if they wanted to go that route, they'd have to pass it next year. And then sometime after the 2026 elections, which they would have to maintain control in. So that's a long-winded way of saying there's nothing right now that tells me election administration is going to change quickly in Pennsylvania. You know, maybe we will see some court cases again pop up. But yeah, that's to your point that that's still the most viable route for changes right now.
Carter, this is Patricio. Now, one issue that came up yesterday was there are a lot of long lines at certain polling places, especially near college campuses. Well, if you wanted to go over a little bit on what are some of the reasons for this usually high turnout for these colleges, and what are some, if you know now, some of the plans to sort of improve accessibility for student voters in future elections?
Yeah, that is definitely something we will be following up on. You know, I checked in only, I only had time to check in with one of the counties where these universities were located to ask them what the reason was. And I checked in with Northampton County, which is where Lehigh University is. And there was reported 7-hour wait times there, which, I mean, you know, I can't even imagine standing in line 7 hours for a roller coaster. So kudos to those voters. But they just said they believe as of now, it was just high turnout. The Secretary of State, I asked him that question as well last night. He said he just believed it was, you know, high turnout, not unusual. He didn't think the counties were unprepared. But certainly we'll be following up there. You know, you asked about, you know, just kind of what was I seeing throughout the day. There was an issue in Cambria County. I don't recall if we talked about that last night.
We did mention it.
Okay, yeah.
Let's remind folks what it was, yeah.
It's a problem with the scanners.
Well, yeah.
Or the ballots being scanned.
Yes, it was a little unclear at the beginning of the day if it was, what was going on, but bottom line is the machines were not able to scan the ballots that voters were voting on. It turned out to be some kind of problem with how the ballots were printed, which, again, I'm going to be following up on. And also I'm going to be figuring out why the county didn't catch this in their pre-election day testing, because that's what that testing is supposed to catch. But, you know, the good news is because the state votes on paper ballots, they just had to, you know, save those ballots in a locked box and now the county is going to be hand counting them, since obviously we can't scan them.
And have they made any a call yet in the Senate race in Pennsylvania? Last I saw, too close to call between Dave McCormick and Bob Casey.
Yeah, I just checked about 20 minutes ago and hadn't seen an AP call yet. So yes, it's still looking pretty tight. Looking at our state election results right now, it looks like incumbent Bob Casey has about 3,235,000 give or take votes. Challenger Dave McCormick, 3,294,000 votes. So, you know, Dave McCormick up by about 60,000 votes. Still fairly tight. Bob Casey hasn't conceded yet. The Dave McCormick's team, I was seeing on Twitter, they are saying, you know, there's not enough votes out there for Dave McCormick to win. But again, the AP hasn't called that race yet.
And then at the Pennsylvania state row offices, as they're called, any surprises there in the attorney general, auditor general, or treasurer races?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't say for sure if the AP has called all of them, but I'll at least say that.
Yeah, they have. They do have.
They all went Republican, as far as I saw. You know, auditor general, attorney general, state treasurer. Auditor general was an incumbent Republican, so they kept that one, as was state treasurer. But now they picked up attorney general, which, you know, our current governor, Josh Shapiro, he was the attorney general, and he appointed somebody to fill out the remainder of his term, but she didn't end up running. So we had an open seat there, and a district attorney from York County won that seat.
Yeah, the AP called that AG race. Dave Sunday won. They called that at 3:18 a.m. They called Timothy DeFore also at the same time in the auditor general race, winning that. And about a minute before, 3:17 a.m., they called Stacey Garrity, winning again in the second term as PA treasurer, defeating Democratic challenger Aaron McClellan. Carter Walker, thank you so much for all of your insight. I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the days, weeks, and months to come. Don't go anywhere.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break and be back with more local election coverage here on Radio Chatskill.
Wednesday night, our series America, Are We Ready? Will invite your calls on the results so far of the 2024 election, including the presidential race, the battle for control of Congress, and the many consequential ballot questions around the country. I'm Brian Lehrer. Join me and Fordham University political scientist Dr. Christina Greer as we grapple with the state of the vote and the state of the nation a day after the polls close. America, Are We Ready?
Tonight at 8 on Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio by Jason Dole. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Here we are. It's the day after Election Day, and we're going over results and also reactions here with our news partners and hopefully with some of the political players here as well as we close out Radio Chatskill today.
Any impressions that you have so far, just you know, the day after, you were in the thick of it up until late at night last night with the coverage and now back hearing results?
Right. I think everybody's reeling this morning from the results of this Liberty Town Councilman race. I think that's what the eyes of the region are on. No, but it is good that we got those results for, you know, Liberty Town Council, Highland Town Council. We know what happened there. I am, again, just curious to see what happens with Congress. It's interesting. 2 years ago, the way the congressional district that we're primarily in here, New York's 19th, the way that went actually bucked some other trends that people were seeing. And now it seems like we've done that again. It's very much a purple area, if that's still a thing. So there's always going to be, and I guess it's a purple country too, pretty evenly divided. And that's kind of the reality we're looking at here.
Yeah. Although it seems as if it's moving further to the right, as some are reporting at the national level. Our partners at New York Focus, have, an article up this morning about how New York voted. Earlier in the month, they asked questions about what would happen in the election, and they kind of posted their answers. One of them was, does Donald Trump have any chance in New York? They had said no, but he lost New York, but makes a historic showing. He swept 4 of the 7 key swing states to win the presidency last night, of course, and appears to be on track of winning the rest. But in New York, he captured 45%, over 45% of the vote. Kamala Harris captured 55% of New York's votes. That's the thinnest blue majority since 1992. And that, I guess their New York Focus is saying, was roughly in line with the few polls of that, of a non-competitive state.
Well, that's where we are right now. And, for more, reaction from the Democrat side, we do have, Sullivan County, Democrat Chair Ann Hart, with us.
Ann, good morning. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, good morning, Tim. I'm tired. You must have stayed up pretty late yourself.
We all did. The country did. You know, you're the chair of the Sullivan County Democratic Party. This is not the result that you wanted to see at the presidential level. But how are you feeling about the other races at the state level?
Well, we're really, really glad that Josh Riley won. He will do a good job in what looks to be a very difficult session in Congress from everything that we can see now. But Josh is a He's a great candidate. It was a great campaign, and I'm really very happy for him that he won, and grateful to all the volunteers that stepped up to really help push him over the line. I think we did better for him this time than last time, which is something, you know, to be grateful for and to acknowledge. And I think that Michelle Frazier really showed that a Democrat can compete in a really red district. She did a fine showing, and I'm sure that we have not seen the last of her. And of course, congratulations to Paula for winning, and we look forward to having her represent us very, very well in the assembly.
Paula Kaye, the Democrat, is projected to be the winner of the New York's 100th Assembly District, edging out Lou Ingracia Jr. And so, yeah, that was that open seat. So that was sort of a big test there. And Paula Kaye seems to have come out on top.
Yeah, she did. She worked hard. She ran a very hard and tough campaign. And she did what she needed to do to win.
And
so congratulations to her.
And you mentioned Michelle Frazier challenging State Senator Peter Oberrocker. You're pleased with the showing there? The result, even though she didn't win?
It's one of the toughest districts in New York State. She had run for office before, but not at this level. She was a terrific campaigner. And I think the results, when you compare them to past results, which of course is difficult because of what redistricting has done over the last few years, it really shows that Democrats are gaining strength in rural areas. They may not be winning right now, but they're gaining strength and they're gaining support. And I think it's important to note and to be grateful for her for what a fabulous campaign she is. I'm sure we won't see the last of her.
And wanted to get your thoughts on Prop 1 in New York, that ballot measure with the Equal Rights Amendment, as it's been called. That's passing it with an overwhelming majority. What are your thoughts there?
I'm really glad that it passed. I think that, you know, it will be one more bulwark against possible, you know, attempts to reverse the rights and that all citizens should have. It was a novel proposition. All the things covered in Prop 1 are already in state law. None of the bad things that the opponents said would happen have happened since it's been in state law. And it's something that I think provides an additional measure of protection for New Yorkers. And I'm pleased to see the results that came through for Prop 1 in Sullivan County, even though the last time I looked at it was about 3:30 this morning. So I don't know if it changed, but, you know, it didn't win Sullivan County, but did very respectful, if I remember correctly.
And before we let you go, just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, the presidential level. You were in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention. Of course, not the result that you expected at the presidential level. Any advice for folks who are, you know, waking up this morning and not feeling great about where things are and what to do next?
Take a breath. Take a little time to grieve. And let's together as a party nationally, at the statewide level and even locally, take a look at what this election has told us and learn from it.
All right. Ann Hart, thank you. Democratic chair for Sullivan County. I appreciate you joining us this morning. Also joining us right now on the line is Greg Goldstein, who is the chair of the Republican Party in Sullivan County. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And how are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling very good. I think, you know, it was definitely a red wave. I don't think anybody can deny that. I'm very happy that there's no fires burning anywhere. Trump is being a gentleman. All the news stations seem to be accepting what happened. I just think it was a great night for Trump and the GOP all across the country. It looks like he's probably going to win Arizona and a couple more of the remaining states. So it was a very good night.
And how are you feeling at the state level, the local level, with GOP results?
Well, I'm sort of disappointed with the assembly race. Lou was a great candidate. Sullivan County performed for him. I think it was very, very close. I think they both got 12,000 votes. But Orange County came through for Paula, and that was the big difference. But Sullivan County did well, so I'm hoping that Paula will serve the district just as she did, you know, as Aileen Gunther did. It's a whole new learning experience for Paula, but I hope, you know, for our district and everybody in the district that she'll do a fine job, which I'm sure she will. And I'm glad to see Peter Oberacher back. He's done a fine job. You know, he delivers for the fire districts, which he just did recently. So I think the county, again, Molinaro, that race is, I think, approximately 3,500 apart. There's 10,000 absentees, from what I understand, a lot from Tompkins. But unfortunately, I think we've lost Mark Molinaro as a congressperson who's done a great job for this district, no matter what party you are or aren't. So Josh Riley's will have a big set of shoes to fill. So
yeah,
nationwide, you know, nationally, I think it was a great night to be a Republican finally.
Finally, all right. Any other observations that you wanted to say before we let you go?
No, I think everything was done in a nice manner. You know, as far as Sullivan County was concerned, as far as the Board of Elections, everything was good. I'm just happy how the outcome was, and there was no rioting or anything like that. I hate to say it, but thank God there was nothing.
No, yeah.
Point.
We're all, I think, happy about that. Yep. Greg Goldstein is the chair of the Sullivan County Republican Party. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Okay. Have a great day. Thank you very
you
much.
Too. Thank you. Yep. And that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Jason Dole and Patricia Rabayo, thank you for your intrepidness during this election coverage throughout the season. And a reminder, tonight at 8, we'll have a special from WNYC's Brian Lehrer, America, Are We Ready? The state of the country now. This is a live call-in show, a national show. Tune in at 8.
And we got the local edition at 6.
Well,
too.
There's that show,
we'll be
too.
Back. Yes.
You can't leave yet. Thank you guys very much. And for more of our coverage, please stay tuned to us here. If there are any other breaking news events from Vice President Kamala Harris or President-elect Trump, we'll be bringing that to you today from NPR. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the new exotic sounds of the Blue Zombies and Cloud 11, plus a brand new album by Herb Alpert.
I'm Daryl Brogdon. Come join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, breezy and warm, times of clouds and sun, and this excessive dry weather is posing a high fire threat. Be careful with anything outside in terms of flame. High near 70, partly cloudy and mild tonight, low 54. Tomorrow, a little cooler, sunny though, and a high near 60.